And he gave me that nickname.
That's so awesome, bro.
And then somebody heard it. And then somebody else heard it. And then all of a sudden the magazines ran a photo and they called it a Simba Slash. It was like, my brother calls it the butt back.
The butt back.
Well, it's a longboarder's version of a layback. But of course, your ass hits the water. So my brother called it a butt back.
Okay.
Him and Bob Barber were not a big fan of my butt backs, right? Even though I still do them to this day. And so all of a sudden it stuck, you know. Longboard magazine, bless their heart, ran the shot. You know, it was an ad for Alex Urbanek and Urbaniak Trunks. And there it was.
Buen día, longboarding community. Tupi Cabrera here with another episode of the Longboardarian podcast. I hope you're ready for a heavy, packed episode with my special guest. But before we go there, remember, support Longboardarian. There's many ways you can do it. It can be with a donation. It could be without a donation. Just your support via Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, by giving me a follow, by subscribing, in the case of YouTube. It's a great way to support Longboardarian. Also, I'm open to constructive criticism. What do you want to hear more of and less of? Any suggestions, any ideas, they are welcome. If you do want to give a financial donation, a tip, you are welcome to do so via the website www.kofi, which is spelled ko-fi.com/longboardarian. If you go there, it's very easy to give me a $3, $5, $10, $1 million if you wish. That'd be awesome. So anyways, let's go and talk about this interview. This, like I said before, is a packed interview. We're going to discuss many topics, including surfboard design, including surfing segregation. That's powerful. There is also some apologies mentioned in this conversation. We talk about the longboarding tribe, the world longboarding tribe, so to speak, professional competitive longboarding, fusioning surfing and work, the Paskowitz, some conversation about surf etiquette, and much, much more. Let me not overwhelm you. Let's go and talk now about our special guest. This man that I'm interviewing today has quite a character. He's quite a character, I should say. Funny, deep, intimate. He's a storyteller. He competed professionally as a surfer for 15 years. During that time, he was ASB world rated top 10 longboarder for many, many years. He's been featured countless times in surfing magazines, including Surfer's Journal, Longboard Magazine, and Pacific Longboarder. He was one of the first surfers to develop and organize surfing programs for the physically challenged. He was the head beach master at California's first surf camp, the Paskowitz San Onofre Surf Camp, founded by legend of legends, Mr. Dorian Doc Paskowitz. He owns and operates a surf travel company that serves families and individuals in taking them to exotic surf spots around the world. He now has also a company called Simba Surf. In regards, this company, it produces surfing helmets in general for water sports and such. He served in the U.S. Coast Guard. He is a proud family man who lives with his wife, Nancy, and daughter Indira in Ojai, California. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and enjoy my interview with Mr. Terry Sims. Mr. Terry Sims, how are you doing today?
Super good. How are you?
I'm very well, even better now that I'm sitting in front of you. Just for context for our listeners and for you to know, in the 90s, I saw a lot of Terry Sims on magazines and videos, and that's why I'm so happy and stoked to be sitting down in front of you, getting ready to ask you some really cool, interesting longboarding questions. So thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Total honor. Total honor. Honor is
cool, man. Cool, man. How's life? Life's okay?
You know, life's about like that presidential debate, you know? It's just,
oh, no. That's not good.
Well, I just thought I'd start off with something non-political, you know? So I think the whole thing just resonates what's going on in the world, you know, that whole confusing, people are pissed, mad, upset, scared, you know, anxiety. But, you know, my household's been very good. It's been an awesome time. I try to look at the positive side. And for me, it's been time with my wife and time with my daughter, you know, because in my vocation, what I do is I travel for a living. And so up until this point, I had been a missing father. So this has been an incredible godsend for me to be able to spend, you know, 3 months, 4 months straight with my daughter. It's been incredible. And she's just blossomed.
So you're saying, sorry to interrupt you, you're saying that COVID has a silver lining impact in your life. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, absolutely. Cool. Okay, man. And I was very, very... what's the word? Flabbergasted to know that you live within 25 minutes from where I live right now. So I'm hoping to see you in the water one of these days.
Yeah. I mean, you look familiar. I mean, it's the first time we've met face to face or cyber screen to screen. And I've seen you paddling around the lineup, but like I said, usually when I'm here, I don't have big windows of time. So I'm not, you know, prevalent in the lineup anymore in the local areas, you know, but if this winter's continues to be this situation, I'm sure we're going to serve together a lot.
Yes. Yes. I hope so, man. Okay. Let's go into the interview. Again, thank you. And I'm going to start with the following question. Some people call you Simba. What's up with that?
Wow. Okay. I'll try to keep this one short, you know, good luck. Right. Well, obviously, I'm the guy. If anyone knows me, you know, I'm 6'3" and I'm freaking 160 pounds at best, dripping wet in the 4'3". And, you know, I'm kind of a little odd looking. And I'm just the guy who gets, you know, I shouldn't say picked on, but, you know, I'm the one in the crowd you look at and go, oh, so, you know, it started off as, you know, everything skinny. So it was Storko, Q-tip, matchstick. It was on and on and on in reference of my frame or lack of. And then that changed because I got to be a good surfer. Then it changed again. It morphed. And it morphed into names like Terror, Torture, Singe Bad. Because I was on a mission, dude. I wanted to be at the best spot on the best day and catch the best wave. That was my whole agenda, right? I didn't want to out-surf anyone. I didn't care. I just wanted the wave of the day. And more than that, I wanted the wave of the year. That was the goal, you know? So being aggressive in the lineup, I was easily mocked, you know? So it was like, you know, I had to go into just, you know, blinder mode and really focus on my passion and my dream, which was making a living at surfing. But of course I didn't know how. So I was on this blind faith road and all these names came. And then finally, after all these horrible incarnations of negativity and being a taker, Singe Bad, Terror, Torture, all this horrible stuff, you know, all of a sudden, I kind of had a moment at Steamer Lane and I saw a couple blind kids walking down the street with canes and the surf was killer and they couldn't see it, but they could hear it and smell it and feel it. And all of a sudden it dawned in my head, I need to take them surfing. don't ask me how, call it whatever you want, divine intervention, common sense, I don't know. A light bulb went off. I made it my mission for the next 2 months. I called up all these people. I ended up with like 10 physically challenged people on the beach. I took them out. My friend shot photos. And all of a sudden I discovered, well, it's a huge story, but to get back to the nickname. So when I came in from this session, everybody was crying. Okay. It was like extremely emotional. Okay. We had people with Down syndrome, multiple cirrhosis. I had a guy with quads, paraplegics, you know, people that have been told they'll never do anything again. And next thing you know, they're out there riding a wave, you know, tandem with me. And they're like, ah! So it was just like this huge thing. Anyway, so we're all crying. We're all sobbing. Everybody splits. I'm sitting there on the bench just marinating in the juices of the joy of giving, which was one of the first big clues in my life that it was the right thing to do, to be a giver. Much better than being a taker. So I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of sobbing and I'm just like never been so happy with myself. You know, I actually did something I was proud of. And this Rasta guy comes up, older guy, and he goes, "Hey, Mom, what's your name, Mom?" I go, "Oh, my name's," I go, "Oh, my name's Terry." He goes, "What's your last name, Mom?" I go, "Sims." He goes, "Oh," he goes, "No, you're Simba. You're Simba, Mom." And I'm all Lion King. No, and he goes, no, man, I'm from Africa, man, and I'll tell you what, man. He goes, "Simba, man, means lion-hearted, man, and I watched everything."
Wow. So cool, man. So cool. And no worries, bro.
And he watched everything I did.
Yeah.
And he gave me that nickname.
That's so awesome, bro.
And then somebody heard it, and then somebody else heard it, and then all of a sudden the magazines ran a photo and they called it a Simba slash. It was like, my brother calls it the butt back. The butt back. Well, it's a longboarder's version of a layback. But of course, your ass hits the water. So my brother calls it the butt back.
Okay.
Him and Bob Barber were not a big fan of my butt backs, right? Even though I still do them to this day. And so all of a sudden it stuck, you know. Longboard magazine, bless their heart, ran the shot. You know, it was an ad for Alex Urbanek and Urbaniak Trunks. And there it was, Simba. And I, then my friends started, and then ever since that moment of giving, that moment of clarity, boom, I got the name I always wanted and I got the direction I've always wanted. I've always knew I was capable of pursuing. So that's the name. Short version of the symbol.
Okay, man. That's an awesome story. And basically you are lion hearted. That is what that Rastaman told you, and you took upon that nickname, Simba. That's rad, rad story. Okay, let's move on, though. Thank you for sharing that. Where are you from? I have this feeling that you have lived in different parts of California, maybe the world. I'm not sure. Tell us the story. Where are you from?
I'm from Pacific Beach, California. I went to elementary school at Mission Beach Elementary, and then in third grade I shifted over with my mom to Pacific Beach Elementary, then Pacific Beach Junior High, and then Mission Bay, of which I dropped out in 10th grade and took the GED night class and scored a 71 and got out early. So I'm a Mission Bay Buccaneer.
Okay. And then past that, what you like?
Oh, my mom, you know, my mom was a single mom, divorced mom, two hellion kids living in Mission Beach when poor people used to live there because there was no commerce. So that's where all the poor people lived. So we were down there and my mom got lucky enough to get a job with an airline that was called PSA, Pacific Southwest Airlines. It was known for having smiles on the planes and the stewardess had the shortest skirts of every single person. And the first time she took me to Hawaii was sixth grade. And I remember getting on the plane. My mom had a drink, like a martini. She had a cigarette. We walked up. We were on standby, right? And they go, "Oh, Miss Sims, we have three extra seats for you. Come aboard." So she's smoking and drinking and walks right on the freaking plane, sits down, puts her drink down, buckles up, keeps puffing. I'm in this plane. I'm flying to Hawaii with my brother. I'm in sixth grade. I'm like freaking out, right? I'm going to Oahu, man. I'm going to North Shore, bro. I'm like, you know, wigging, right? And so, again, a long story, try to be shorter. I've traveled my whole life. because of my mom's involvement in the airline. So I've lived in many places. I've lived in Molokai. I've lived in Hanalei Bay. I've lived in Santa Cruz. I've lived in Puerto Vallarta. I've lived in Santa Barbara. I've been bouncing around. I lived in Key West in the mid to late '70s. So I've had the travel bug my whole life, thanks to my mom.
And right now, as a older gentleman, let's call you, you now live in Ventura County. Is that right?
That part is correct, but the gentleman part was not.
Okay.
Don't call me sir. Don't call me sir either, man. I'm getting tired of that one.
Okay, man. Okay. I'll try not to.
No, I'm just kidding.
I've read some information out there that you have a pretty cool lifestyle in regards to what you do for a living. Can you tell us about that? And what other things have you been up to lately in regards to what you do for a living?
In regards to what I do for a living and what got me here, basically in front of you today, is that moment I told you about when I took the physically challenged people out surfing. That was my on-ramp that took me off a bad path and put me on the right path. And so that moment on, I knew I was here to share surfing with anybody who freaking cared to go. That was it. That's me. That's me all the way. You know, and so by the grace of God, Buddha, my ancestors, my mom, my dad, every past friend I've ever had, whoever the heck it is watching over me out there and the rest of us, they shined a light on me for that. And for that, I was turned on to people like, you know, Bob Pearson, you know, Doug Howitt, Steve Coletta, all these guys up in Santa Cruz that did not know me. They did not owe me. All they did is try to help me, and that propelled me. And then Rich Harbor walked up to me and Wingnut introduced me, and I will forever be in Wingnut's debt for that. Through Dorian Paskowitz in Israel, they hired me because they heard of what I did with the surfing with the disabled, and they heard what I did, so they offered me a job to run their surf camp. And when I got that opportunity, I really found my calling. Oh my God, I absolutely am born to freaking pass surfing on. And you know, I had so much help and respect, and Dorian is like one of those father guys, you know. He showed faith in me that very few have, trust in me that nobody had really, up to, you know, very few.
And let me interrupt you really quick. We're talking about Dorian Paskowitz, correct?
Yeah, Dorian Paskowitz, rest his soul. I know him. And Israel and Jonathan and Adam and Abe and David and all of them, the whole family, the whole group, mom, you know, Nava, they all gave me a shot. And then I met a guy and he said, I want to take you to New York and turn you on to my friends because I own a gym and I have over 200 personal trainers and you're the single best personal trainer I've ever seen. I want you to come surf with me and my friends in New York. So I went out to New York and I surfed Montauk. I met all these wonderful people, and through every single one of those wonderful people that took lessons from me, my career was launched. That was 20 years ago, and I've been on the road ever since with an expanding clientele base that is nobody surfs with me once. Very few. I'd say about 90% of the people I surf with, we have an ongoing relationship. So
that's awesome.
That's kind of how the surf. So what I do is I do surf travel. I do surf coaching, I do surf teaching, and I do surf lessons. And I find that there are degrees of separation from those three things. I also do a lot of guiding. I also do a lot of entertaining. I also do a lot of cooking. I also do bartending. I'm basically the freaking party meister of surfing that travels with people who hunger for what we all grew up around. It's their time to play. And damn if I can help make that happen, you know?
Yeah.
Why should I try to horn surfing?
Okay. So all of those things that you mentioned, Terry, are part of your, let's say, package, your service. You go with people to different spots around the world, and you offer all of that you just mentioned. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's so freaking rad. What are some of those places that you take people?
Well, you know, because of I had an opportunity at one time to do a more group kind of deal where, you know, you charge less, but you take a lot more of them, which makes it kind of more sustainable and a little bit better model for people that don't have a lot of money. But I was more concerned with local impact than I was anything. I did not want to be the guy walking down the beach with 10 people. You know, that's not me. I want to go to the real place. I want to go to places that are historically rich, culturally important, and extremely hard to
access,
penetrate.
Okay.
You can access them, but that doesn't mean you're going to get a wave.
Okay.
So I wanted to take them to the most special places. So I decided the business model for me was to stay super low profile with maybe one or two people at most. Every once in a while, I'll do a family. But when we do those family deals, I put them in a location where basically we're alone. So what that means is I'm always constantly trying to stay ahead of the crowd.
Okay.
So if you asked me 10 years ago where I'd go, I'd go, oh, Cabo, Costa Rica, Nico, you know, the typical places. I used to go to Hanalei, you know, because I lived in Hanalei for a while, and I love all those guys and Titus, and they're nice enough to let me come there and make some money, and I try to spend money while I'm there and educate my people on the importance of keeping the Hawaiian culture and the people alive and not kowtowing to the developers and the greed of the golf course owners and all that other stuff. So but now it's totally different. You know, now because those places got tracked out, right? They just got packed. So yeah. Then I moved again. So, you know, I started doing Fiji and I did Europe and then I, you know, skipped around some islands. I went to the Maldives early on and got that really uncrowded. I surfed with Tony Hassan at Pasta Point. Eight foot and spitting, right? Oh. Like insane. And then I go back 2 years later, there's like 1,000 people there and I'm over it, right? So I'm always moving, you know, but the one mainstay I have for sure right now, best spot on the planet, is no doubt about it, a little island past Bali called Nihiwata, called Sumba. And on Sumba is a resort called Nihiwatu. And if I start talking about that place, it'll be about a 5-hour interview. So I won't say, a whole lot about it, but I'll leave a little bit of mystery behind it. If you want to discover the essence of real surfing and you want to discover your path in life, you freaking need to go to this place. Okay. It answers questions, man. It's not. And of course, I love Jeffreys Bay. I take them there. And I surf with my friend Bruce Gold, and those guys at J Bay, they allow me the honor and the ability to go out with one client at Supers and pop him into a couple waves on lesser days, of course, on lesser days. And then when it is good, I play the role, right? Like I sit farthest in and farthest over, and I wait for permission to go. Permission, you know. So because I want to do it that way, The ripple I leave behind, the flotsam and jetsam I leave behind is not trash. It's gold. I help their local economy. I help them with whatever causes they might have that my clients might be into helping them with. I praise them for what they do. I help them with whatever they want. I leave surfboards for people. I leave wetsuits for people. I try to leave positive stuff behind me at all times. And that way, I know I'm welcome back. Because if the guys at J Bay don't want you paddling out at Supers, you ain't paddling out at Supers, man. Unless you like the old school stuff and, you know, paddling, which I think is good. Yeah. I'm over that. So,
okay, let's move on. That's very cool, your answer. But I want to keep going with my outline of the questions and topics. Let's go with, I hear you are behind something called the Simba helmet. What's going on with the Simba helmet? Tell us about that.
Simba helmet. Well, in the early 90s, a guy named Danny Cortazzo came up to me in a surf shop in Santa Cruz, and he had a helmet. And he goes, hey, man, I want you to have this helmet. You know, you're surfing really good. Everybody likes you. Well, not everybody. That was bullshit, totally. But a lot of people like you, you know, and you're semi-influential, you know, you definitely get looked at a lot, you know. And it's okay if they're throwing rocks at you, at least they're talking about you. But anyway, so it gives me this helmet. It's insane. I wear it. I had surfers here starting really bad. I was 60% closure. Doc Scott from Hotline said, no, dude, you got to cover your ears. You're going to be getting drilled in like 2 years. Nobody wants the drill in their ear. So yeah. I wore this helmet Danny gave me for 10 years straight. I think Wingnut dubbed me the human Q-tip. And all these other people, right? I was just like, and I had these wetsuits that you've seen my shots. I was the neon noodle, man. I don't care. Somebody gives me a wetsuit, I'm going to wear it, man. And I'm sick of black wetsuits. I grew up with those piles. So, So to get back to it. Yeah, so I was into helmets. I wore the thing 10 years. I took it off. I had Doc Scott look in my ear. He said, your ear has recessed. The bone growth has receded to only 20% closed. I can't believe your body did that. I've never seen that actually happen. And I was like, yeah, dude, well, I don't know. He goes, well, for one, you got great healing properties. And for two, you clearly wore it every single day. And I said, you know what? If I wasn't wearing my helmet in the water, I had a beanie over my ears or a hood, you know, because it's that hard wind that drives the moisture at the beach. Not even in the water, but at the beach, there's the mist, you know, and that mist is slowly driven in your ear, causing you to get surface ear. So that's how it happened. After that, I started my business. So I started traveling. I kept wearing them, and then it fell apart. I could never get another one. And I was dissatisfied with the way it looked. It looked just, I was getting tired of being mocked. Dang, 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 dang. You look like that. So I was like, go over it. So this launched the idea in my head. Well, you know what? I've got some money. I've got some position. I want to make the best surf helmet ever made, because as you know, the last couple of years, I've seen so much tragedy in surfing and all this new information about, you know, cumulative low impact head trauma and all these other cascade of things that happened. You know, I mean, honestly, my brother got skin cancer in the head 3 years ago and he's gone now, you know? So what we do every day out there, you think your golden blonde locks flying in air groovy. Well, they're kind of not. So I created this helmet called the Simba Surf Helmet to protect our future, protect our youth, and protect what's left of us old guys' career.
Okay.
That's and, what I do.
If there's people that are listening to this interview that all of a sudden are like, shit, I want to know more about that helmet. Where are you going to send them to so they can check out your
help? Well, you know, we have a website. It's open right now for pre-orders. It's simbasurf.com.
Okay.
You can go there, you can get a pre-order in. We just got news yesterday that our first 500 are coming in and we'll be here in 2 weeks. First people to get the helmets. I do believe there's even a small discount with if you're the first pre-orders. Obviously the website orders all go up first, then the distributors go out second, the international distributors, and then the rest we house for more orders. And at the same time, my friend Danny Cortazzo and partner up in Santa Cruz said to always feel free to come up to either me or him and just say hi and ask questions. But Danny Cortazzo is in Santa Cruz and he has already shown most of the shops, and I'd say about 90% of them are very receptive. So we do believe they're going to be in most local shops probably by Christmas.
Okay.
And
cool.
If they're not, you know, do me a favor and go in and ask your local shop if they're going to carry Simba. That would do the world a giant favor because this is safety equipment and it is necessary. Everybody who's listening right now has gone to the beach and seen it isn't the 100 man heat no more. It was 300 at the lane last week. And this is the new deal. Surfing just grew. And so you better be prepared. So I'm just trying to get people to be a little educated, a little bit smart, and just put their health above everything and their children's health above every single thing.
Okay, man. Let's go deep now into longboard specific topics, which a lot of the audience is always thirsty for. I'm thirsty with these topics. I want to know your opinions, your perspectives. How would you describe the longboarding of the 90s? And we're going to compare it to the longboarding today. So I want to tap into your mind and see what you have to say about the longboarding of the 90s and how it transitioned to where we are at today. Go.
Okay. What do I think of longboarding in the 90s? Well, you're talking to there's not very many of us, maybe five of us, but the longboard of the 90s put me on the map. It it quenched my thirst for unabridged style. And I was in an arena of non-judgment. Sure, there was a little bit of bickering judgment, but it was more making fun of each other than anything, which is a great compensator for keeping your egos in check, right? That's why we make fun of each other, to keep make sure we all stay level-headed here. You know, so it for me personally, it was probably the most profound 15 years of my life, honestly. I mean, where I'm at now is incredibly insane and a total gift, and who would have ever thought, you know? But that was what put me here, was the act of Donald Takeyama and all the Southern California guys, Bill Stewart and L.J. Richards and the Oceanside Club and the Santa Cruz Club. They kept longboarding alive, man, through the 80s, because, you know, growing up in the 70s, I always longboarded. Whenever it was 2 foot, we went and grabbed our brother's old longboard out of a backyard and rode him. So I always had that. I watched Skip Fry from the time I was 5 years old till now. You know, what more of a role model do I need, right? Like, I always had it in me. You know, surfing boards should not be segregated. Don't take this wrong, but all boards matter. All styles matter. Just like all lives matter, okay? I do not judge. I just say that era right there, I would be standing next to Joel, is 13 years old, riding a tri-fin cutting-edge Takeyama, just the spirit of surfing, the unabraded, unabashed, he was great, man. He still is. He was just so young and pretty and perfect, and it was like, oh, my God, man. And then I looked to my left, and there's David Nguyen. And then there's L.J. Richards. Then there's Donald Takeyama. Then there's Rich Harder. Then there's Bob Pearson. Then there's Steve Coletta. Then there's, I mean, it's the who's who to you, who. I meet Nat Young. I met, oh, my God, you know, Greg Knoll. Holy Jesus. Huh. You know, I'm meeting guys that are like never to be repeated again. And so you know, it was, for one, it changed my life forever. For two, it was the biggest I believe it was the best gathering of an eclectic group of time surfers. So we had guys from the 50s all the way up to the kids from now. We had the heavy Hawaiian influence with Rabbit coming all the time and the Kealanas behind it, bringing us that base, that root. Why the hell are we doing this? Well, because you guys started it all, right? And I couldn't wait to tell them that. Now, that being said, you don't want to be in heat with one of them. They are the most insanely talented, insanely physical. I believe the Hawaiians are the best physical specimens humanity's ever popped out. And when you're in the water with them, you can see it. They're freaking fish. They're born in the water, man. They are the water. They are surfing, and we owe them everything. Without them, we'd be nothing. So the longboarding thing, not only did it do that, what I said for me, not only did it bring the Hawaiians kind of back into the soulful part of it, you know, the Duke of Hanamoku, dude, it's all just for fun and self-preservation in a mad world. It's our moment of sanity in an insane world, you know? And so it's much more than it appeared to be. We were called the redheaded stepchilds. We were given last heats of the day at low tide, blown out. We were no prize money. We were used, abused, and stepped on. But they had no problem exploiting us, you know? So it was a very strange place to be in. It was like the surf world's waving at us, come on in. We want you to make us money, but don't show up at our break. I don't want to see you in the lineup, but I want you to sell all our stuff for us. So it was a really confusing time. But what I found was the family unit of longboarders was incredible. We all loved each other. Sure, we bickered a little bit sometimes, but not often. In fact, very few. Do you know every time I went to a longboard contest, there was at least two parties?
Two parties?
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that – well, it doesn't mean – okay, when I was in the pro shortboard division, you know, I did that for like 1 year. I never went to no party. I never made a friend. I never met a legend. I never did any of that, dude. I was just a disposable freaking ringer for a surf company. Nobody cared anything about me. So I was disgusted with the whole thing, because all my life has been about is acceptance and appreciation. That's all I've ever wanted. You know,
you got that in longboarding, you're saying, in the 90s.
Yeah, it gave it to
you
me.
You felt it was different.
It was so different, dude. It was such a departure from what I saw in the movies as a kid with, you know, busting down the door and how hard it was for those guys to create a pro tour and what those poor dudes had to go through and the mistakes they made, you know, and then, you know, how do we take from what Duke and them were doing to a modern day, you know, gladiator pit with, you know, money and points and judges, you know, who are these judges? Who is anyone to judge my serving? Anyway, so I just think the family unit hasn't been seen like that since probably the 50s and before, when there were so few surfers, there was a family. Even though they're bigger than they thought, there's still a family and a functional family. The longboard tour in the 90s was a functional family of eclectic people of all different ages from all different places. Even the ones in Biarritz brought guys from all over the world, and I noticed we were all kind of on the same mission. We wanted to show our skills, but we didn't want to be harshly judged, and we wanted to be involved, not just used and tossed, you know what I mean? And so that's what the longboard movement of the 90s really says to me more. It was a gathering of a tribe, a regathering of a tribe, searching for the higher meaning of surfing, which was in the beginning stages of the development of surfing. That's when it was pure. There was no sponsorship. There was no how much money can I make on the deal. It was pure, 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 pure love. Now, that being said, I understand you can't pay rent with seashells. So I understand we got to quantify by charging money. Like if I was probably a trust fund kid, I would probably teach for free. I swear to you. I swear to you. I swear to you. I would.
I believe you.
But I can't. I got a mortgage, a wife, a kid, a dog, a house, and, you know, and I ain't no spring chicken. So I got to like do this stuff. So anyway, for me, you know, I can't talk enough about all those guys and what they did for me and how they supported me. And even though, oh, and I got to throw out one little thing here before I go to the second part of this question. I want to apologize to all those guys too, because there was a lot of guys that I screwed over, right? I was harsh on the lineup. I was mean. I was loud. I was brash. I was a pig. I was a total pig. I cut my best friend off if it meant winning a heat, you know, because each man for himself out there, I was on this mission. I didn't have a lifeguard job. I didn't have dad owned a construction site. I had Zippo. I had a car I had to push start and sleep in. That's what I had. So I wanted to apologize to everybody, if everybody I've ever offended out there for that. I love all you guys and girls, and I'm sorry if I had to be a dick, but I was on some weird unknown mission. I didn't even know. I just knew it was a righteous mission, and I had to continue it. So I thank you for having me on here so I can at least apologize for
so
being such a pig.
Perry, I have a feeling you're saying you're apologizing because there must be a gene within you that is all about competitiveness. And maybe that competitiveness made you behave in ways that now you're like apologetic about. Am I right?
Yeah, totally right. Totally right.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay.
You heard him, guys. He apologizes for being a dick in the heat.
I do.
Okay. I believe you. Thank okay. You.
What was the second part of that question? I forgot it already.
The second part, how do you see the longboarding of today compared to that longboarding from the 90s?
Ooh, that's a touchy question, bro. Asking Matt Young what he thinks of longboarding today. Okay, let me try.
Well, no, I'm asking Terry Sims.
Okay, well, okay. Well, you know, I'm not known for like lying very well or bullshitting, right? I'm known for like calling it like I'm the umpire of I'm an umpire of surfing. I'm gonna call them like I see them. Okay, I'm gonna call this one like I see it. From what I've seen, you know, and I've been watching. You know, it's not like I just, you know, dropped off once I got my cover shots and never looked back. I've been looking back ever since, you know. But I just took my covers as a sign to get out while the getting was good, you know. So I did. But I've been watching Duct Tape, and I've been watching Relic, and I've been watching WSL. I've been watching very closely. I've been watching what Wingnut's doing, what Joel's doing, what Devin is doing. You know, I've watched Colin McPhillips. You know, I'm still watching. And the new athletes, I have to say, Tyler Jensen and Soleil Errico and those guys. I have to say, I have to say they're surfing really, 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 really good. I'd have to say their athletic ability is phenomenal. Their training methods are way better than ours. You know, you can't call drinking a six pack much of a training method. You know, that was mine. So, you know, these guys are way more athletes. They're way more focused. They're way more sponsored, and they seem to be more professional. I will say that for sure. Now, duct tape and what Joel's showing, right, which is a different side of longboarding, because what I didn't want, honestly, is I didn't want segregation. I'm sick of segregation. I can't even go off enough about how much I hate segregation. I can't stand it. It's not how I grew up. It's not what I was told when I was young by my friends and my mentors and all the guys at PB Point. It's not what Skip Fry taught me. It's not what any of them taught me, right? It's integration. So unfortunately, what I see happening now is an exit from integration and more into, okay, well, I'm a logger. Okay, I'm a high performance longboarder. Okay, I'm a ripper. Okay, I don't like division. So the only real critical thing I have to say about them is one, critical. They're super good. They're just as good. They're every bit the athletes, if not more. Two, the equipment they're riding hasn't advanced 1 inch, and I'd say it's almost gone backwards. Okay, sorry. Donald Takayama's gone. Rich Harbert's gone. They're all gone, dudes. You're riding imitation equipment, not from the originals. And I know they're unreal, and I know they work well, but I have to tell you, I don't think that's ever going to be replaced. You know, those boards of the day, you just had to have a certain style to ride them. You know, the ones I see now, yeah, they're good, but they're specialty boards again. I either want a giant single fin that you can't turn, but you can hang 10, or I want some flippy little board made in Taiwan that I can just rip around like a shortboard. But then they lose that flow. They don't have that flow. It's more maneuver oriented more than it is flow oriented. So, and the Skip Fry boards, which are some of my favorite, Larry Mobiel, Skip Fry, they make a Pendarvis and all that, and Steve Liss, they make more of a trim oriented board, which has been completely discounted in all competitive surfing. You paddle out on Skip Fry, you're going to lose. Okay. You're going to lose because you can't hang 10 on one. Not for long. Anyway, if you can, it's a nanosecond, but the way they flow. So really my opinion about the modern longboarding is I'm sad to say, I think it's losing touch with its roots, but I'm happy to say it looks like before our COVID-19, it was flourishing and spreading. And the biggest thing it's done is it's brought people into surfing that might've given it up before this longboard revolution, because boards got so stupidly small, nobody could freaking ride them. But you know, kids with all their teeth and perfect hair and no jobs and no hair on their chest, right? You know, if you don't live at home with mommy, you're not riding a 5'2" neckbeard or whatever they call the latest thing, right? So, you know, the new revolution of the rebirth of cool is what these guys are to me, right? And so I enjoy watching them. I just the only thing I would say, I would just like to see them get back to their roots a little bit more. You know, I like seeing duct tape, but I don't believe in invitationals either. So I don't like that so much. Again, exclusive, right?
However, what I've seen, and I want to know if you agree or disagree, is that, you know, I'm a recent resident of California. I've been here 5 years total, 3 years in Ventura. What I've seen, this is my experience, is that a lot of the young kids are going longboarding when back in the day, when I was a young kid, I was a rarity. So like me being a longboarder, nowadays I see a lot of teenagers and 20-year-olds that have taken upon a 9 foot plus board. And I feel like you would agree with me that you see that, like you go to different surf spots throughout California and you see a lot more longboard surfing than in the 90s, for example, or the 80s. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? It's like, it's crazy. And that's what I meant about, I mean, there's good and bad in everything, right? Nothing's perfect. So all I meant to say about the modern longboarding is our group, the 90s group, the rebirth of cool, you know, we lit another fuse, right? Like we were the match that went, and then the industry followed that match and threw a bunch of gasoline on it. And went, you know, and now there's 10 times more people out in the water having fun again. Fun again, because let me tell you, if you surf through the 80s and early 90s, you know, it wasn't real fun. It was an amped in crowd, aggro, tiny boards wouldn't catch nothing. We called it shortboard hell. You'd see a guy miss four waves in a row and just freaking out, you know. But he could duck dive it and stick it in the trunk of his car. So, you know, like, so to see the longboard re-revolution, this new ignition happen, you know, from Joel and Alex Nost and all these crazy CJ. Well, they were from my core group, but they have transcended that period where a lot of us took that opportunity to dip out, right? So those guys have carried it on. They perpetuated it, you know, and there's still guys. I didn't mean to say nobody surfs like David Nuiva no more, but, oh, nobody does. I love CJ. CJ, I love you, man. I love all you guys. You guys are insane. You're way better than I ever was. But, I mean, come on. Let's be real here. Is there ever going to be another Skip Fry or Phil Edwards or Mickey Dort or any of them? No, man. How can we ever do that? But what I do love about them all is they are pushing the same love of it, right? Because it brings them joy. And that's what surfing's supposed to be. So as long as there's promotion of longboards out there, I'm behind it 10,000,000% because all I want is for people to have fun out there, you know? So
that's the bottom line, having fun. Okay, talking about joy and fun, let's talk about competition. What are, in your opinion, what are the cons of professional competitive longboard surfing? The cons first, and then we'll go with the pros.
Half of me. You nailed it earlier. I am super competitive, dude. I've been competitive since the day I was born because I had to like fight for everything, right? So I'm an evil baseball player, even worse football player, and even worse basketball player. Okay, I am competitive to the core. I will smoke you for the pure joy of watching the look on your face. Like Sonny Garcia said it once, I like to beat people to see the look on their face. I know what he's saying, man. I love it too because I wasn't the kid who was like, oh, you're so good. I was the kid who was like, oh, you're too skinny to even play. So I had this huge chip on my shoulder when I showed up on the surf scene. I wasn't there to win. I was there to prove people wrong. You know the difference? A big difference there. I wasn't gifted. I wasn't as good as those guys. I'm sorry. I just wasn't. But I had more desire because I had a bigger point to prove, because I had a bigger chip on my shoulder, because I had more people than you could even imagine telling me, you'll never, you ain't even, are you kidding? So for me, my personality, that was definitely a flame up my butt. That lit me up like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to show you what. Yeah. And that attitude came from being raised by my brother and being raised by my friends at the point. Yeah. They gave me that. Don't you be a Nancy, a little Miss Nancy, and go whining away with your tail between your legs. You're a man. You're from PB. You're from the point, man. Stand up. Be who you are.
Yeah.
Play the game, but don't change who you are. So
let's be more specific with the cons of competing.
You still didn't answer that. You're like, God, I'm so bad.
I mean, you did because I make the assumption with the answer that you just gave is that you, and you said it before, you were a hard ass. You were a dick when you were competing because you were so freaking competitive. So that's the number one con I would say that you are projecting is that you were too competitive and perhaps you lost friends or it rubbed people wrong. Any other con? Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, the other con for me, which is the biggest one of them all, was you know, when I did win the occasional event, which wasn't often, I'd look out and I'd be up there, you know, I'd be all nervous walking around. I didn't know who was going to win. Everybody's going, "Oh, you won, Sims," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, right, sure, okay." You know, you never believe the crowd, right? Because judges are judges. You know, they see what they see. And so, and I'm up there and I'm nervous and I'm looking out in the crowd and all of a sudden, here it is, Terry Sam's first place. I'm like, I look over and I see my brother and he's just like, yeah. Then I see my friends. Yeah. And then I see all the other people, dude. And they look like they just want me to die and go away. I bummed them out, man. I look in the audience and when I win, I see people who don't like me anymore. Okay. Then when I got second place, my sponsors would look at me and go, some of them would look at me and go, oh, first bridesmaid, first loser. How come you didn't win? Like, what's the matter with you? Right? So that crushed me. That crushed me, dude. And then when I lost, when I basically got smoked in my first or second heat and I like completely underperformed, I was devastated. But emotionally for my own personal self, because I always want to perform at my highest level, but also because the obligations I had piled up on my shoulders from the people who have helped put me there and showed faith in me to perform to the point where we could continue their business by getting the exposure that we needed to sell their boards and wetsuits and wax and everything else. So for me, there was never any real winning. You know, I'm going to give a quick story and then we'll leave it. So for me, competing, not my world no more. I never did like it. I don't want it no more. Now, if it's a game of baseball, then I'll take you on full on. if it's surfing, to me, the format they're using now is absolutely wrong. It's total cross grain. It's completely the opposite of what everybody wants to feel when they go out. Okay. So, but for me, the one thing that I did that brought me the most pride was I lost one day first heat in an event I'd won 2 years in a row. I had an emotional moment with my family and things went wrong. And I was just down, you know, and I went out and I don't think I caught two waves in my first heat and I was down. I was done. I was done and down. And I was taking the walk of shame. This guy named Ron Brazil walked up, a photographer, said, Sims, I want to talk to you. Took me in the trees in the field in Santa Cruz and had a nice long talk to me about the responsibilities of being me and how people looked up to me and how this will be a lesser event if you walk off right now. Your people need you. Your friends need you. Everybody needs to see you here. So man up and stay here. And I was like, it's like, oh, thanks, man. Just what I needed, you know. So anyway, I did. I stayed all weekend. It was the insane weekend. I ended up having an incredible time. I had more fun than I've ever had. And when they gave out the trophies at the very end, I got the Jay Moriarty Award. I got the Duke of Hanamoku.
Cool.
I've never won that. I've never, ever been even mentioned in the same breath as a person who would win the Good Guy Award, right? So I don't like competition.
Okay. Now do us a favor. I'm going to challenge you. Maybe find one pro of competing. One of the pros.
Oh, there's pros for sure. No, the pros. It put me here in front of you right now. It gave me my daughter. It gave me my wife. It gave me my house. It gave me my job. It gave me my career. It gave me my clients. It gave me everything I'd ever searched for. It is, in my book, I consider it was a necessary evil. It gave me Bob Barber. It gave me Rich Harbor. It gave me Brenda Scott Rogers. It gave me everything I freaking have right now.
Okay. There we go. Well answered. That was not one pro. That was many pros. Beautiful. Okay. One of the favorite topics of my audience is surfboard design. I want to know if Terry Sims has a preference in his longboards in regards to design. Do you prefer... sorry for my dog. Dexter! there are modern designs. There's more traditional designs. What is your go-to longboard design that you prefer?
Wow. That's an unfair question, man.
Is it?
Well, it's like asking me if I like apples or oranges better, or blue and red better, or,
well,
you know.
Okay, so, Let's be more specific.
Okay.
On a shoulder high day, my shoulder, not your shoulder. So let's say 4 feet, 5 feet high day. What type of design do you prefer, generally speaking?
Okay, I'll give it a. That's a awesome way to put it. Okay, so if it's waist high, I want a freaking David Nuiva Bing nose rider 1966.
Okay.
I want a straight up traditional log, full on. Right? If it's waist high and clean.
Why is that?
Because all I want to do is nose ride. All I want to do is hang 10. I just want to feel like I'm flying.
Describe the feel. Describe, I mean, you just did, but can you be more specific in describing the feel of that traditional Bing Nuhiwa board? How does it feel?
Those boards of that era, you know, that weighed 25 plus pounds and had big round rails, you know, the big beefy ones were the ones I was gravitating towards. I never liked the skinny, thin knife rail 50-50 or any of those, you know, or even the Weber Performer was hard for me to ride. But the big chunky ones, you know, the ones that had the rounder rail was just, yeah, there's just something about the way those things, when you lay a turn down and you get that, I got a wide stance, right? When I get my wide stance going and I do a fade takeoff, front side, and I do a sole arch bottom turn with my arm over my head, owed only to and only done for the respect of my freaking elders, right? That's why I do that. I don't do it because I want to be looked at. I do it because I'm just showing my respect to all that have passed who are up in the sky looking down going, hey, that was my turn, Sims. So this is what, so that feeling of that turn on those boards in that kind of a small, glassy, waist high, semi-Malibu-ish kind of wave, it matches the wave's total energy and personality to the T. But once I do that turn, what am I going to do on a 25-pound 10-footer? Not a whole lot. I ain't doing no floaters or butt backs. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go straight to the nose. I'm going to hang my five. I'm going to throw my freaking ode to Skip Fried and Mike Henson, San Diego, core Joe Roper, you know, soul arch, right? Because that tells everybody in the world who I am and where I'm from and what I believe, if you know how to interpret people surfing, which most people don't, by the way. So that is the perfect board for me there. Now, head high. I want the Sims model. I want a high-performance diamond tail tri-fin. I want a 17.5-inch nose, and I want a 14.5-inch tail, and I want that thing 2 3/4, 2 7/8 thick, because I want to rip the living crap out of it, and then I want to get the massive nose ride, right? And I want to feel that rail. I want to feel the rail engaged for 20-yard turns, big blasting, long lip grinds, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not an aerial guy. I like my butt back. What can I say? And now, when it gets one more category, when it gets bigger than that, right, when it's overhead and actually cranking, right, that's when I like the ones that are in between the two. Let's say the Takayama in the pink. That's when I like those. Yeah. So I have room for all of those designs, and I think they're absolutely all relative, and they're absolutely all insanely freeing of my soul.
Okay. So I got a message when I posted on my Instagram about me interviewing you. One very enthusiastic person that follows me on Instagram said that one of the best boards he's ever had was a Terry Sims model. Right now, it's skipping my mind. I have a feeling it was a Harbor. Did Harbor have a Terry with a diamond tail?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this person was very, very enthusiastic about letting me know how good that board was. Can you quickly describe that board?
Wow. Yeah. Quickly. I can't do anything quickly except for what, except for, you know, I'm good at that real fast, but you can't show that. Okay. So
go.
Rich Harbor and me worked together for almost 15 years side by side. He was the dad I never had. He took me to ball games, fed me hot dogs. And when he made this board, I was just like so flabbergasted that he would even freaking look at me, let alone want me to ride for him. And so we made a bunch of boards together. He made them and I rode them. I didn't know anything about custom longboards because I didn't know. I just rode whatever was laying around when it was small. So he goes, I'm going to make you a board. So he makes me the square tail. It was unreal. And then he makes another one and another one. And then all of a sudden he sends me this one with a diamond tail. And he goes, so which one did you like better, the square tail, the rounded pintail, or the diamond tail? The noses were all the same, 17.5 channel bottom pontoon nose, regular double barrel V, one big center pin, two small side bites, right? And I said, well, I personally really gravitated to the diamond tail. It really, really suits my style, like incredibly well. The pintail was great too, but there were moments I couldn't get it to release off the bottom fast enough to get a more vertical hit. it would almost draw the turnout a little too long, just a little bit, you know. But if I wouldn't have rode the Diamond Tail, I wouldn't have known any better, actually. You know, I loved it that much. And then the Square Tail was the opposite, but the same. It was great on the more squaring off at the bottom coming up and squaring off at the top and getting the tail to release more off the top of the wave. But I wasn't getting the kind of projection and sustained bottom turn I was wanting to get. So when the Diamond Tail came and I tried it, Rich Harbor's, I would imagine, probably the most technically advanced shaper on the planet that's probably most likely ever lived, in my opinion. He knows things because he works with Caltech engineers. He's one of the mad scientists all of his own. You know, he is. He's like Hobie Alter. He's just the fidget king, man. He invents all kinds of stuff all the time. And he starts telling me, well, why do you think you like it so much? And at first I thought he was asking me, but he wasn't asking me. He was testing me to see how much I knew, right? So he threw me out this question like, well, why do you think it works so well? And I'm like, well, I think the extension of the diamond gives me the long drawn out turn, right? The tip of the diamond tail gives me, it acts like a pintail. But the 45 degree angles on the sides of that diamond give my board the ability to, in an instant, have a more vertical release. It's release off the bottom is a little bit faster and quicker and sends me more straight up to the top instead of off the diagonally off the top. You watch any longboarder go up to the top, try to hit the lip with a 10 inch fin. He's never going to get it vertical. He's going to get it like three quarters because that thing won't release. That's why.
Unless you're a Hawaiian.
Unless you're Hawaiian. Exactly.
Continue. Sorry for the interruption.
So that was the concept that I felt. I felt I was getting the pintail out of the diamond extension, and I was getting the square tail out of the cuts on the edge. And he goes, wow, Sims, that's exactly right. That's exactly what that is. That's exactly why I made it, because I heard what you were saying. And I've never done this before on a longboard, especially a narrow, high-performance longboard, especially one as thin as yours, because my board draw is extra thin. This whole thing about like volume and liters is just, dude, really? All I care about is 2 3/4, bro. That's it. That's the number. You want to know your thickness and change the length of the boards as you want to go bigger, smaller waves, whatever. So for the Diamond Tail, to let that enthusiastic person know, the reason it works so damn well and the reason I stuck with it for so long and the reason I put my name on it, right? Because I didn't put my name on a board that's already been done 1,000 times by 100 different people, okay? I didn't do that. I'm not gonna use my name just to hawk some guy's board that he ripped off from like whoever. Who, you know, is, yeah. He knocked off, you know, everybody knocked off the Babe. That was the wooden board. That was the balsa board the legend, Phil Edwards wrote.
Okay.
It was called the Babe, that wooden one, right? It changed surfing, right? And everybody knocked that board off. Rich Harbor made the Trestle Special. Everybody made one, right? And so I didn't want to do that. I wanted something. If I was going to put my name on it, because he asked me, do you want to put your name on it? Fucking shit. Put my name on a Harbor surfboard? No, I don't want to do that. Yeah, I don't want to do that, man. But I want to make sure I don't look like some clown who's trying to repackage an old design and put some new name on it. You know, I didn't want to do that. So
yeah,
it was my answer to everything I had looked for in every, it was the biggest honor I pretty much ever had in the surf world to this day. Well, there's one other honor, but that's, I can tell you another one, but to this day in the world of professional surfing, Rich Harbor was most definitely by far the one who gave me the most feeling of self-pride, self-love, and self-respect, of which we all know is one hard hell of a thing to maintain all your life, right? Yep. You know, to love yourself every day is tough, you know, because we all make mistakes. So Rich was like, so that's kind of the story behind the background of that board, you know? So that's why it worked so damn well. And it worked in 1 foot mush, and it worked in 10 foot screaming offshore lane. So the whole essence of that board was, we knew it was impossible, but just so this person understands where Rich's head was at, Rich was into making one surfboard for every day.
The Swiss Army knife
of surfboard, yeah. But on the high end, So the Mercedes-Benz Swiss Army knife applied. And I believe he accomplished it. And I want to thank whoever that person is. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that, because you know that board's been a very contentious board this whole time, because people don't know what it is. They're like, it's like me. It's unclassifiable.
Hey, I'm gonna write to this person and let him know to make sure to listen to this interview, because
dude, if he wants, you know,
you're talking to him directly.
Okay, good.
Okay, so let's move on. I have listeners' questions.
Whoa.
Usually 24 hours before I interview my guests, mm-hmm. I will throw out a message on my Instagram for people to throw me questions for my guests. However, I forgot to do this with you, Terry. I apologize.
That's probably a good thing, bro.
No, I mean,
why did you burn me that day? You're such a dick.
Anyways, I have a few questions. I did it like 2 or 3 hours before sitting down with you today. And here's a question from a Grom from Ventura. I know this kid, very, very talented kid. His name is Jack Gordon. And he asked you a great question. He says, did you pull off the bottom turn of that famous picture? And he's talking about the picture by Bob Barber. You know the picture I'm talking about? I feel like you have a...
Yeah, it's all... Yeah, the cover shot of Journal.
Yes, you're very straight in that bottom turn. Your, what, right hand is caressing the water as you're doing the bottom turn and so on and so on. You know the picture I'm talking about, right?
Do I know the picture?
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell Jack, did you pull that off?
Okay. I'm gonna ask our interviewer one more time. One quick question before I answer you, Jack. Can I give him the long version or the short version?
Give him the long version.
Okay, long version. Here you go, Jack. You ready? This is a good one, okay? This is gonna be in my book, all right? Which maybe I'll write someday. I don't know. I gotta learn how to write first. But okay, I'm sitting in Santa Cruz. I'm broke. I'm push starting my car. I got a struggling longboard career. All this kind of like not fun stuff is happening, you know. But I'm hell bent on in leather for the finish line, which I don't even know where it is. So it's kind of like I'm running a race and I don't even know what the finish line is. So I'm sitting in the backyard of this girl's house, thinking about, wow, I gotta do something. So I call up the magazines and I say, hey, man, Rich Harbor wants to send me to Cabo and do a photo shoot with Bob Barber. You want to run some photos? And they go, oh, yeah, send them to us. I go, oh, great. So I call up Rich Harbor and I go, hey, Rich Harbor, Surfers Journal wants to do an article on me and they want me to go down to Cabo and do a photo shoot. You want to pitch in some money? He goes, okay, gives me a bunch of money. Then I call up Bob Barber and I say, hey, Bob, Rich Harbor and the magazines want to do an article on me in Cabo. You want to come shoot it? He goes, oh, yeah. And then I ask my friend, I go, hey, bro, this magazine is doing a big article on me, and they're going to send me to Cabo. Can I stay at your house? He goes, yeah, man. Wow. So next thing you know, I've got this whole con job in motion, right? Total con job, you know. Hotline gave me money. Sex Wax gave me some money. They all gave me money to pitch in. Well, I ended up with enough money. I was able to buy Bob Barber's ticket. I was able to get Josh Molcoy to come. Who's Josh Molcoy? Is Harborville's son. It's like Josh is like, are you kidding me? He's like, you know, underground hero of the century and the true essence of all adventure surfers that ever wanted to adventure anywhere, right? Like, and he's nice, man. Like, unbelievably hot. So that's how we all ended up down there, right? We all ended up down there on basically a line of poo from Terry, a full con job. And then we're out surfing, and I got my white rash guard on and my purple trunks and my yellow board with my yellow stripes. I'm looking like the neon noodle in Tropic Wear. I get a couple of Crip shots, you know, popping a couple boosts and real progressive stuff. And then Barber, this is the good part, Barber calls me in. He says, this is how good this guy is, right? And believe me, shooters of this day and age don't even do this. He goes, I want you to change trunks. I want you to put on those red stripes. Retro trunks, and I want you to put that board away, and I want you to grab your clear Harbor single fin three stringer. And he goes, and then I want you to go right there. And he pointed at this one little spot on the beach. He pointed at it. You said right there, see a little wave, and there's a little crappy wave went. Pfft. And I go, yeah, close out, right? He goes, I want you to go right there. I want you to take off on the first wave you see. I want you to fade left big time, like you're going left. And then I want you to do your Terry Sims thing. Just do that bottom turn, dude. And he goes, I want you to lay into it. And I went, okay. So I paddled over there. I look at him. He gives me the thumbs up on my positioning. A head high wave closeout comes in. Crystal blue, though. Beautiful Cabo crystal blue water closeout. I drop in going left, right? I hit my turn. But before I do it, I'm thinking, like, this is so funny. I'll tell you, that's my truth. It's awesome because a lot of the shots of me, they're just spur of the moment. And I'm so into it, what I'm doing. I'm not thinking about how I look. I'm just like trying not to kill myself, right? Because a lot of it was crash dummy surfing, you know, close out shore break and stuff. So you're in the pipe and all of a sudden you're bouncing off the sand and this and that. So on this one, I got a chance to actually produce my look. So when I dropped in, I stuck my left hand just behind my butt. If you look closely enough, it's tucked behind me. Let me see. It's my left hand. Yes, left hand. And then I put my right hand on the finger drag, and I intentionally drug two fingers, not a whole hand, because I knew if I put up a whole hand, it might cause too much spray, maybe blocking my beautiful face. So I only drug two fingers, and the luckiest thing, right when I was at the apex of that turn, I hit a backwash. The backwash slid my board sideways, causing my back foot to come off of the heel right up on only my toes. So if you look at my back foot, you'll see it's actually up off. The heel is up off of the board. I'm basically sliding out at that point, right? Whoa. He caught me in mid-sole arch slide. To answer
you make it.
The young Grom's question, yes, I made the turn. But what I did is I faded left. I did a hard right bottom turn and a flying kick out.
Okay.
So if you want to practice that turn, young Grom, you want to get good at that turn, young Grom, then you start doing that. You start dropping in, fade left. Doesn't matter if it's a closeout, whatever it is, right? Just don't shoot your board into nobody. Lay it out. As you're going left, lay it out right as you get to the bottom of the wave, right where the wave transitions from the gutter to the flats. Right there, lay it over and just go into a flying kick out. Don't even try to make the wave. And the more you do that, the more you'll figure that turn out, because that's how I learned that turn. And that's the story behind that shot.
Awesome. Awesome, bro. Awesome answer, man. I'm so glad that I asked you for the long version of it.
And I'll tell you what, everybody, that was the first time anybody's actually ever done that. The only ones who know that are my personal best friends. So now the cat's out of the bag, but thank God it's 20 years later and pretty much everyone's dead, so I can't get in trouble.
Okay, here we go, Terry. Okay, here we go.
Sorry about that comment.
No, it's okay. Okay, we got Albert Garcia. He's another resident of Ventura County. He's probably more of a longboard nerd than I am. And he asked you the following. Of your four cover shots.
Oh, I like him already.
On the mags, which one is the most memorable and why?
Okay. Ready for another short story?
Whoa, short or long? Are you giving me the option?
I don't have short stories, bro. Okay. I'll give you the condensed version. No doubt about it. The crowning glory of my career is clearly the covers on the Journal, right? It's the most part of this magazine, you know, it's the most prestigious, blah, 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 blah. That was quite a thing, and it was quite a trip the way I put that trip together, yes. But it was a wave I didn't make. It was a picture. It was a staged event. So there it isn't my favorite one. My favorite one is Longboard Magazine, me standing in that semi-awkward position under the lip. First of all, because I've got a lot of hair. I like that thing. I got a lot of hair on that shot, bro. I loved that wetsuit. That was a custom-made 4-3 short-sleeve full suit. So you can find one of those on a rack. Like, never. That suit was epic, man. Epic suit. And then the day. Photo shoot, Bob Barber, going to Secret Surf. I'm with Kevin Misk, Wingnut, and my best friend, Brad Anderson, who just came down from Reno to surf with me. And Bob wanted to do a mission, so we hop in the van at, like, I don't know, 6 in the morning. We're driving. Bob's about 20 minutes in front of me. And, you know, when you're doing a photo shoot with these guys, it's critical that you're there early and on time, because the golden light only lasts like 15 minutes. If you miss it, you just screwed the whole thing. You just missed your whole opportunity. So it's all about that window of light, right? And so we're driving there. Bob's gone, right? All of a sudden, right around Moss Landing, there's this huge traffic accident, right? So me and my friend have to take a detour. I don't even know where this detour is going, dude. So I'm getting freaked out, right? Because I know it's good. And Wingnut's shooting and Kevin's shooting with Bob, and I'm like pissed, right? Because I don't want to miss out on the action, right?
Steal
my wave, you know? No way, bro. So anyway, we drive for half an hour, man. Totally screw this whole thing up, right? We finally show up at the spot. Bob looks at me. He's shooting already. The guys are in the water. It's pumping. And I'm like sitting there. Bob's just shaking his head at me going, what a loser, right? Loser. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, so I rush into my suit. I jam out there because I forgot my full suit. So the only suit I had was the other suit. And this place is freezing balls, man. So it was like, oh, God, short sleeve, great. I'm going to be out there just going, you know. So I swear to God. So the second I paddled out, my friend caught the first wave of a set and just got shacked out of his mind, right? The next wave is right to me. I still got dry hair. I drop in and I get that wave. And I just stand there. And Bob just goes, click, 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 click. And I'm just standing there. And the funny thing was, that was about a 20-shot sequence. But the reason the editors picked that shot, because that shot, I was in the light. I was in the golden light. But all the other shots after that, I was gone, man. I was just standing in that thing, just and then just boom on the sand. And I ate crab, board, and flying. In fact, I actually think I broke that board on that wave. I did. I broke that board on that wave. And then I basically got steamrolled by the shore break right up in front of Bob's camera, right at his feet. And so I'm looking at Bob like, I hope you got that, bro. And he's looking at me going, I can't believe you're late and you just got the wave of the morning. Like, what's up with your luck? You know, so that's my favorite cover. That's okay. The story behind it. And, you know, so I don't know.
I have one more question from Albert Garcia. Mm-hmm. And I love this question. He asked, how did your height affect your surfing? What adjustments did you have to do?
Well, because of my body style, and fortunately, I started at such a young age that, you know, when you start at 5 years old doing anything, it's pretty easy, right? So I started off belly boarding. Then I went to knee boarding. Then I went to riding rafts, blue rafts with yellow around them and rope around them. That's this early 60s rafts. And then I got my first board when longboards went down to like 6'6", right? I got the first one of those. So by the time I got on a surfboard, I had already kind of mastered standing. But to answer his question, when you're a long, tall guy, whether you're learning or you're intermediate or you're trying to advance and to do some new type of maneuvers, I can definitely tell you that being tall and skinny, you have to focus on leverage and torque. You're not ever going to be powerful and forceful. You're going to have to use your height and your leverage to manipulate the board and get you in the positions you want to get in. You know, you're going to have to learn how to get low in a crouch. So that means you're going to have a wide stance. Right? Because a 6'4" guy cannot get in a small crouch to get barreled if his feet aren't far enough apart to get in a catcher's or, you know, poopy squat, right? Like a pig dog. So, yes, being super tall was not easy. It was actually much more difficult for me than everybody else. There's no doubt about it. It is not a giant asset until you get good. And then once you're good, and I don't mean pro, I just mean you're good. You're able to go out and surf and rip and throw some lippers and, you know, catch waves and not miss them and not be an idiot, you know, not be a beginner and just fall off going, you know what I mean? Like a good surfer, you know. Once you're kind of good and you got it down, then all of a sudden the height, I believe, turns into a major asset. All of a sudden I've learned I can see farther out than everybody else. I can paddle faster than everybody else. I can position better than everybody else. I can drop in earlier. I can get set up faster.
Interesting.
And I have more torque, so I can lay a turnout bigger, right? When I do my layback or my butt back, my brother calls it, by the time it's fully extended, my board's almost 6 feet away from me. That's how far out it is because of my length. Where you see some of the pros like Kelly do one, their board's like 3 feet from them.
Yeah.
So it's just different, right? When your body's fully extended and you're skinny like that and you do a huge wrap, man, to me, visually, it's impressive. It's really impressive. To me, the Matt Young deal, the Michael Peterson deal, the big guy surfing deal, the Billy Hamiltons and all, I just absolutely am in love with that. So, you know, even though I don't like being tall and skinny, you know, it's just what I got. And I think it can be a real asset. You just got to give yourself a break and take it a little bit, you know, take it slow and think about leverage and torque.
Okay. Albert, there you go. The answer from Mr. Terry Sims. Terry, we're towards the end of the interview. I can't wait to do... I promise you I'll invite you again to our podcast for a part two of the Terry Sims saga, journey, story.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Honestly, I think.
We are going into the 10, Terry. I'm going to give you 10 words or phrases. You shoot back with whatever comes to mind first. Okay, remember, this is PG, maybe R-rated. but the importance is that it's a rapid-fire format, okay?
All right. I'll try to keep it clean.
Okay, here we go. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Number one, Atlantic or Pacific Ocean?
Pacific.
Pacific, you said?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. A surfing pet peeve.
Oh, Jesus. Pet peeve? No leashes.
Okay. A meal post epic surf session.
A meal post, what does that mean?
A meal. Like what?
Oh, a meal. Oh, a meal.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sushi.
There we go. What do you chug it down with?
Sake.
Full on Japanese. Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Okay.
Sakadubi.
Number five. 5 second hang 10 or 12 o'clock off the lip?
Tie.
Tie?
Tie.
Okay. That's a good answer. Number six. You are in a final with Rusty Keulana, Devin Howard, and Bo Young. Would you prefer it to be in Noosa Heads or in Malibu?
Doesn't matter. I beat them all. Okay, total joke there. You guys don't take it personally. You guys, all three of you have kicked my ass several times, so we know that was just total BS. It wouldn't matter. They'd smoke me anyway. I mean, honestly.
But anyways, which spot would you prefer, just for the fun of it?
Oh, Noosa.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Number seven. You could only have one longboard in your quiver. What would it be?
you know what everybody wants me to say, you know. I'd have to say the Harbor Sims model.
Okay,
what else would it be?
Hey, it's the Mercedes-Benz Swiss Army longboard.
But okay. Again, you could have categorized it with years, but that's okay. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, back paddlers are blank.
Back paddlers are
no dicks. Dicks. You just
No. I want to be a little better than that. Okay, so this is the last one.
No, that's okay. Number eight.
Okay, back paddlers are
blank.
Fearful.
Wave burners are blank.
Narcissistic.
Great answer. Number 10, the last one. If you could take Duke Kahanamoku anywhere in the world to surf, where would you take him?
Trying to make me cry here at the very end. That's pretty good.
No.
Yeah. You're kidding. I haven't even thought about, wow, that's a heavy dude. Where would I take him surfing?
Yeah, where would you take him surfing?
My hometown, Pacific Beach. Okay. Show him where I came from.
Okay.
Show him what he left behind.
Awesome, bro.
I'd rather surf Waikiki with him.
That'd be nice. I understand that thought. Okay, Terry, we're at the end. at the end, I do the shout out. Shout out is for you. You give us a shout out to whoever you want to thank, whatever you want to say. It's freestyle here, but keep it condensed. I like that word, condensed.
Okay. Well, definitely a big shout out and a big giant hugs and big giant spiritual loves to everybody that helped put me here in the longboard world at that time. You know, from Rich Harbor to Hotline to everybody, every single person in the industry that helped me. Right. And then I also want to thank all the guys and the girls that competed with me, because they put up with me and they dealt with me and they were nice to me and they were never really mean to me. And they inspired me, you know, Deb and Joel Wingnut. I'm really proud of you guys for accomplishing what you have. It's inspired me and helped drive me. And through that, I have gained a wife, a child, dog, career, family, friends. So huge shout outs to you guys, right? I've always wanted to tell you that, but we just never seem to see each other. So, and then of course I want to thank everybody at Simba Surf Helmets and everybody who's ever believed in me in the fucking first place, including you, my friend, sitting across the computer. And I want to thank you for taking an interest in Terry and my life and what I've experienced so far. I'm willing to share with people and I'm an open book, and anytime anybody wants to ever get a hold of me, I will never turn you down. I will never reject you. I will never judge you. So if there's anyone out there who needs my help in any way, shape, or form, don't hesitate to contact me. I'm very easy to find.
Okay, Terry. I want to do my own shout out. I want to thank you for sitting down with me. Like I said earlier in the interview, towards the beginning, you are a legend. You are a certified original gangsta of longboard culture. And I know not only I'm taking a full appreciation of this experience, but people that are listening throughout the world are too. And I tell you that because I already have had messages from people that know that I was interviewing on how excited they are about this episode. So thank you so much. And I wish you health and love to you and your family, man. And I hope, I mean this, I really hope to surf with you today, tomorrow, whenever, because you're 25 minutes away. God damn it. Let's go surf, man.
We're surfing together. There's no doubt. Okay. That's a win.
I want to show you my Soul Arch bottom turn. But that's another topic. That's another topic. We got to go. Big hug to you, brother. Take care, man.
Okay. Let's see more Soul Arches out there, people.
Hablamos.
Aloha. Thank you.
Now, that was one fun, interesting, educating, exciting interview that I did with Terry Sims. At least that's my opinion. Sometimes I'm lost in words when I'm with my guests. So I'm going to take this opportunity to tell Terry Sims, thank you. Thank you for making me a stoked young man back in the 90s. For motivating me to take my longboard and going out to surf. And after this interview, now in my 40s, my late 40s, I feel the same way. After sitting down with you, listening to your answers, interacting with you, I want to go out and surf. I want to take out my longboard and go surf. Thank you, Terry. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned. We have at least two more interviews before the year's end. Take care. Hablamos. I'll see you in the water. Yee!